Ladies and gentlemen, beings of Earth, welcome and thank you for tuning in to this week's wonderful episode of The Most High Show. I'm your honored guest, Clayton with a C, L-A-Y-T-O, and an N. And I am privileged to be here on this celebratory event with not one, but two birthdays this evening. Guys, thank you so much for having me on the show. I am here with the beating heart and soul of Most High Media, Christian Jumpman Jansen, and Chad Sultan of Swag Smith.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Christian, why do they call you Jumpman?
Well, they don't call me Jumpman.
Good answer.
Yeah.
I had it there in my notes. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But I will say that I think, you know, any good alcoholic needs to stay busy, you know? And so, and I think part of being creative, you know, I'm constantly kind of on to the next, and I got to do something. And so, you know, I think like Most High has been the one thing though that I've been like, I gotta keep doing this, you know, where I've kind of moments and periods where I'm like, okay, I'm bored, I'm done, we did it, let's go, let's move on to the next thing. Every time there was something that's just like, nah, you gotta keep this, you gotta see this through to wherever it needs to get to. And so I think I have been a jump man. Then no one called me that. but this is one thing I'm not jumping on from. Yeah.
Nice. I love it. Good answer. Off the cuff. Michael Jordan does make some appearances through here from time to time. So if you come up and support Most High, you may not see Michael Jordan. So
He is the Jumpman.
The original Jumpman. Chad, you care to take a venture why we call you Sultan of Swag?
Sultan. Move the mic, swag. Yeah.
Well, I like the thing is because I dress nice.
That's one part.
Okay. What a deep question. Wow. Sultan of Swag? I don't have a good answer. I just show up. I dress nice. I try to be nice. That was terrible. Cut that. That's the best I got. Tell me, Clayton.
So why I've coined you Sultan of Swag? You certainly head up all the merchandise here. You're putting out some incredible swag for Most High Media. Christian is adorning it. There's a lot of people in our studio audience that have it on this evening. And if you want some yourself, you can go to mosthighmedia.org merchandise. Go get you some of the dopest threads on the street. So, good plug for you guys.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the plug.
I had to break it down to him when we started the t-shirt thing in terms of dope, unfortunately. So, I'm like, we got to re-up. So is this when we go buy the sweaters? I got to know what you're saying.
Yeah, and immediately I just jumped on. Like,
and then
yeah,
I'm like, now you can't get high on your own supply. I mean, you can't keep making yourself hoodies and wearing them. You gotta sell the stuff. You can't just wear the shit. And once I broke it down in dope man terms, he was like, on to the hustle. He knew what he was doing.
I got it from there.
On to the hustle.
On to the hustle.
On to the hustle.
You see that?
See, all things take on a new meaning in recovery.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, as you guys can see, we've got balloons. We have one cupcake. It is both Christian and Chad's birthday. They have taken a break, come out from behind the screens, the mixers, from behind the curtain, and they are coming on their own show. So we're really excited to have you guys here. Thank you for all that you guys do, truly, to put on Most High Show and everything you do here at Most Media. Just fantastic. We love doing that. So we were supposed to have two cupcakes, but unfortunately, because of budget cuts, we're only able to do one. So if you want to see two at next week's episode, go to mosthighmedia.org, click on donate. We love you guys. Thank you for everything you do for us. So we're going to get into it. So given that Go ahead.
We need two cupcakes. We need two cupcakes. So thank you for that.
Donate generously. Yeah, we'll have them soon.
So we can get a second cupcake. Christian's not going to share that with me. I already know. So we need that.
Well, jump. Carry on. Jump man, don't share. So given it was birthdays, we have a lot of family in the studio audience this evening. Thank you guys for traveling to be here with us today. I did think it was apropos to bring kind of family into the topic of discussion this evening. So it may get a little deep, but things get a little bit lighter towards the end, such as our journey in recovery. But so I'll go ahead and kick us off with our first question. So to either one of you, both of you chime in. Tell me how your family dynamic and upbringing has shaped you as a person and how it may have contributed to the disease of addiction.
Woo. Woo. He just hit us with the truth.
We come out strong.
Your mom's here and my dad's here.
Right. We're in big trouble.
How do we answer this question?
Very carefully.
Without an awkward car ride home.
I drove here, so. Sucks to be you, sir. And he's staying at your house, right?
And he's staying at my house. Oh, man. So, yeah.
Y'all say a prayer for Christian. But I'll answer it. A lot of the people that have seen my story on here before or that know me personally know that I grew up in a single-parent household. And my mom raised me. She's here tonight, so shout out to my mama. Yeah. She kept me in line. Thank you. She kept me in line, and she worked hard to raise me right. However, she has, like, some brothers and some sisters, and they're a little bit more rough and rowdy than my mama is. So I got the pleasure of growing up with all these wild uncles that partied a lot. So I like to think that was good and bad because I had, you know, these guys around that contributed to my childhood and then my young teenage years through, like, baseball and, you know, sporting, hunting, fishing, all that type of stuff. But there was also a lot of drinking and using involved in that. So as a kid growing up, it seemed normal to me. Like, these are guys I look up to, and that seems like what adult men do. So you know, at a very young age, I thought, well, they do it, so can I, you know, and they seem to do it responsibly, and maybe they can, maybe they do. I could not successfully use and drink and live life. So it influenced me, you know, good and bad, and I love all of them for it. So if y'all are watching, I love y'all. And I appreciate y'all.
Nice. That's a fantastic Thank you, Chad. Answer.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Really good.
Yeah. Guys, you can't clap for every answer. That's going to be so weird. That is so awkward.
Well, I'll take a cue from your answer. I think it's great. You know, we were talking about, you know, my dad is a musician, and so played bluegrass. And so if you don't know about bluegrass, you know, it's... You know, it's basically, you know, country jazz, you know. And so a bunch of people get together and they get in a circle and then they start jamming, you know. And so it doesn't matter what your skill level is. You know, if you can only just strum and you figure out the notes you can strum, that's what you do. You know, and if you can really pick, then you take a step forward and you do a solo, right? And so the cool thing about a bluegrass jam session is everyone's welcome into the jam. You know, and it doesn't matter your skill level. So I think growing up, I used to see that in my house a lot. We had this big living room. And so, you know, on the weekends, or I don't know when it happened, but it would happen often that there'd be these jam sessions and people at the house a lot. And so I think what that gave me was this sense of community, like this sense of like, yeah, this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to get together with your people and then you make music or you do something. And so I think that really informed me. And, you know, just the shit I do with my people has changed over the years. You know, went from tagging and, you know, breaking into houses, you know, to all the other weird stuff, to doing this kind of stuff, right, where we get together and we're... But I think the thing is like, I love, like, when a group of people get together and you're making music, it's a group of people and you're doing something collectively. And so it's one thing that everyone just hangs out. Oh, that's cool. But when everyone's hanging out and there's and we're all doing something, like we're all moving to in the same direction in some place, that's like where I feel like the sweet spot of my soul is. So I think that really informed me. Yeah.
Nice.
Good answer.
I love that. The sweet spot of my soul. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And
that's great.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing when we all come together and we're working towards that culmination of that goal, and everybody's standing beside each other. And that's what I love about our community in general, our recovery community. These people sitting here on the couch. I mean, we stand shoulder to shoulder, and you know, we march on towards this thing, and it's beautiful. I think there's a good mix, like for me, of nature and nurture within the disease of addiction and stuff. So there's the biological factor, there's the environmental factor, and I believe that both play, you know, a pretty heavy hand in the development of our disease and stuff. So I always find it interesting to have those conversations.
Yeah, like the social aspect of addiction is huge, right? Like, and I always try to, anytime I'm teaching or informing on the subject, you know, I always try to, because it is something that really does bring people together. You know, if everyone's under the influence of the same substance, you know, whatever it is, you're all kind of having this same distorted view of reality together. And it is a beautiful thing, right? But it's synthesizing something that is possible. Humans can connect at that level. We don't need the substance, you know? And so when it synthesizes that, it kind of like speeds that up. You know, I think that's why in social situations you have people, a lot of people drink and hang out. And normal people, they have a couple drinks and they hang out and then they stop drinking, you know. But it's a social lubricant, you know, and it gets people kind of talking and stuff. So I do think that the social aspects, and I think that was a big thing for me, it was that community that I was forming as in early use. I was forming a community, and the drugs were just a thing that we did. But then, you know, the biochemical process of addiction takes on, right? Where you become chemically reliant and dependent on the substance.
Yeah.
And then not everybody who hung out became that.
Yeah, that's where we're different.
Most of us did, but I don't even know if one of us didn't, but most of us did. Some people don't, right? But a lot of us, just once you get that connection with the chemical and it's your thing, then you know, I remember being in treatment and the counselor going, when do you use the most? You know, with friends, family, whatever, you know, or alone. And it was like, alone, you know, because towards the end, that whatever community I was trying to cultivate, I didn't want to share my drugs, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? I wanted it all for me. And I didn't want to be, you know, hands in my bag, you know. And so then I lost the one thing that I think I started trying to chase, which was community. And when I got into treatment and I got sober, that was the first thing that was given back to me, was community and connection. It's one of my core values. And without it, you know, it's the main thing for me.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Thank you.
Me as well. Community is everything. It had, getting sober and then finding my people. Because kind of like what Christian said, when I started out, it was fun, and that was how I fit in, and that was how I found a connection with people. And then that became the normal, like that became my identity. Like, that's who I am. I get high, and I party with anybody and everybody, and I outdrink everyone. And the problem with that is I don't stop when everybody else stops. I continue until the next day or until I pass out or until I wake up in a jail cell. So being able to find that same connection, like in a sober community, has been a game changer for me. You know, I mean, look at this room full of people. We got a room full of people here, you know, that all came from far away, like drove an hour to be here just to support the show and have a recovery community. So I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I've certainly found connection to be the opposite of addiction, and that love is the most powerful drug. So we all still get high together, just in a different way.
Like that.
So since committing yourself fully to recovery, how has your family dynamic changed, and how much does their support mean to you in your recovery?
Wow. Well, I think, like, the answers in, is in the audience tonight. Like, our family and support is here. So it means the world to me.
He's going to cry.
I'm trying not to, Christian. Don't do that.
I was trying to help you out by calling it out.
I know. I appreciate it. It did let me.
Hey, tears make good ratings.
Yeah. So
tears and titties. Tears and titties.
That's right. What was I saying? I lost it. Support of my family. So, yeah, it definitely changed because there towards the end of my addiction there, you know, I was so lost and, like, I was deemed hopeless and like, non, you know, fixable or whatever you want to call it. And so, over, you know, it took a while to get, like, a lot of that family support and that family trust back. But since getting it back, like, I wouldn't trade it for anything, and I'm super grateful for it.
Oh, by the way, I talked to Reeves today. Okay. And there, you guys have a mutual friend.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know who this person is. I can't remember her name. But she was like, oh, my God, you know Chad? We did not think he was going to make it.
See? Dang.
Damn it, man.
You were one of ones. They were like, yeah, other people had hope. Exactly. But we saw Chad. We just thought Chad would have never. And just, and then they right. see you now on social media and you're living your life. And
yeah.
And you did. You did make it.
I did.
Yeah. And you ain't never got to go back.
That's right. Mm. I'm currently still making it and plan to continue making it. Yeah, that's kind of hard to hear live on a show like this, that that this mutual friend that I don't even possibly remember or know who it is, you know, said that. I mean, it's a great feeling that I could kind of like show them that anybody is savable, anybody is worth it. So, but I couldn't do it without support from my family. My mom's here, and she's been like my rock. She's always had my back, and Lord knows I've put her through some shit. Oh my goodness, I've put my mama through some stuff. She's stuff that most adult human parents should never have to see, nor will they have to see. So she's definitely stuck it out with me and been here with me, for me, through all of it. So it's great to be able to be sober and like take care of myself now and not always constantly need help or like always have a problem that I don't know how to fix or always be in a situation that I can't get out of or calling from jail like it's me again for the 20-something time. So it gives me a great bit of gratitude to be able to sit in here and talk on this show openly about it. Like, yeah, that was me. That was me for my whole entire life. And here I am. I'll be 38 years old tomorrow. So it took me some time to get here. 38 years to get here. it's been great. So I'm just glad to be here. And I am super grateful for all of my family support.
It was really cool. Like, I'm sitting in the office, pretending like I'm working. You know,
he does
like I do.
A typical day.
Yeah, a typical day. And Chad's mom, Darla, right? Darla shows up, and he's giving her the tour. You know, and I'm like, I'm just gonna sit back and then this is a big deal. You know, and he's doing the tour, and then he shows her his office. You know, and I was just like, it was really cool to hear. You know. That moment, because I felt like that was a moment, you know, of arrival, and it's like exactly what we're trying to do here, you know, is to deeply and profoundly impact people's lives, but that doesn't work always, because the person you're trying to pour into has to have the capacity and the willingness,
absolutely,
you know, and that's one thing. Like Chad is just so great to work with because. He's dependable. He's reliable. What he gets that I think some of the other guys that we've tried to work with who had other strong suits, but what Chad understands is that he's a part of something bigger. And so he's not just coming in here looking for what he can get out of it. You know, he's got to eat. He's got to, you know, he'd like to live indoors, you know, things like that. But
right.
But he's not like so self-consumed about what am I getting out of this. He's like, I know that I'm a part of something. And he can see that bigger picture, and that stuff you can't teach. You know, you can't give willingness to somebody. You can't give open-mindedness, and you can't give people that perspective. that they're a part of something bigger. I think that's a psychic change that only God can give, mm-hmm. right? And it's cool, and it's such a relief for me, you know, to have somebody in the trenches with me every day to be sitting with, you know, yeah. that I feel like, cool, we're rowing this little ass boat, and we got one oar, but, you know, we take turns, you know?
That's right.
And it's a beautiful thing, so, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I love it. Well, I've worked with Chad before, and yeah, you're a lucky man to have him.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Y'all don't do this. Don't do this right now.
Dude, this studio changeover, you know, anyone who knows this old studio, and they're seeing this new one, it was the most efficient and effective studio switchover we've ever done. First off, I always usually did them by myself, but having someone who actually knew what he was doing, you know, and then me having the wisdom to just listen. Mm. You know, yeah. He's like, no, we're gonna do it like this. I'm like, we're gonna do it. Why are we doing it? And then I just have to go, all right, dude, I'll just let this guy do his thing. But this was like such a quick changeover,
yeah.
And it was, yeah. We did it in a day and a half, I think, to redo the studio,
yeah,
yeah.
We've all got strong suits in line,
yeah,
you know.
We were in Home Depot, and Christian, I'm like, what do you want to get first? We're getting paint and some plywood and stuff like that, and I'm like, what do you want to get first? He's like, I'm just following you, bro. This is your area. I'm just here. And I was like, okay, cool. So it was good to be a part of that and to be able to like lead something that I actually do know how to do. So
yeah
it was cool.
Yeah, I always tell Chad, I said, Chad knows what the fuck's going on. So
it's on my business card.
It's on the business card.
Yeah.
Nice.
Just a guy that knows what the fuck's going on.
It's a good skill to have. So, believe it or not, looking at these two, it's not all bod. These two are actual living and breathing dads. So tell me a little about your role as a father and how your journey through addiction and recovery has shaped how you parent your own children, and what do you tell them about that journey?
Let me jump on this one.
Yeah, go for it, bro.
So, you know, when I got sober, my kids were...
Hold on, can I interrupt you and just say that all three of his kids are here in the audience?
Yeah, they're all here.
Shout out to them.
Yes.
One of them is back there on the switcher. Oh, no. Mama Jansen's on the switcher.
Mama Jansen on the switcher.
But three kids are running right here in the studio.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
Okay,
and on. You know, I think Jolie, the oldest, you know, she was probably about 10. So she got a brunt of the dysfunction, you know. And the other kids were you know, about 5 years, 6 years behind that, right? But when I got sober, but I was still an egomaniac. It took me years, I mean, too long to just kind of like... get over myself, you know, take myself so seriously, and it took a lot of work. And so when I look back, you know, I think that one of the main things is they have parents that are together. You know, I think if I would have continued my use as loving and as tolerant as my wife is, you know, I don't think that she could have stuck around for, you know, many more years of that kind of dysfunctional behavior. So that's one thing, I think. And, you know, and then when I look back on those years where I was so kind of full of myself, and that's the one thing where it's like everything else is like, yeah, you know, it was what it was, right? But when you look back at your kids and you think, okay, the impact that my drug use, because even though I'd gotten sober, you know, me being like that was a part of my healing from that. And so it took a while, you know. And when I think about the impact that that has, and I think, man, if I had the consciousness that I have now, and I could have had that 10 years ago, you know, the difference in the way I would have raised them. You know, I think they've all turned out to be beautiful human beings, and they're wonderful. And so... you know, you can't change it, but that is one thing that, like, I think of, you know, and it's the one thing that I think it still, it doesn't hurt like it used to, you know, but it is the one thing that I kind of feel still, you know, because I think that's just as a parent, that's a hard one. It's a hard one to kind of like, you know, when you look at your children and you see, man, like, I could have done different or better, because what a lasting impact you're going to have on this planet. You know, like, I remember Andy Stanley had this thing when he would say that the most unique thing you can do on this planet is be a parent. You know, a job can find a new employee. Your wife can find a new husband, you know. But your parent, your kids, they can get a stepdad, you know. But there'll be no one who could ever fill that role of dad or father, right? Everyone's going to be a step down from that. And so I took that really seriously, and I think I made the shifts, and I've been available, and I was around, you know. But it took me a long time to kind of get over myself. And so that was a big shift in recovery. And, you know, I'm not saying that like to be ego deflating or like, you know, but just like if people have gotten sober, like stopping using is the easiest part of it to me, you know, like that's the easy part. Yeah. Okay, cool. You stop getting high. Congratulations. Big freaking deal. Now become an actual human. That took years for me to become a real boy, you know, because I was just so full of myself and who I was supposed to be and who I thought I was. And it took years of, you know, sponsorship and meetings and relationships and looking inward and messing stuff up to kind of go, oh, you know, realize who I really am and who I really ain't. So, yeah.
100% agree. Well said.
Yeah, thank you. So mine's a little bit different because I don't, I have three beautiful children. They're younger than Christian's. Mine are, I have Carson, who is 7. I have Cameron, who's 11. And I have Carly, who's 15. And so I say mine's a little bit different because they're not here tonight and they're still currently living with their mother and grandmother. Because there was a time that we weren't being responsible. We weren't living up to the role of a parent. Even though I like to think I was, I like to say, you know, I was a good dad and I was around, but I wasn't like fully present. So, and that was tough for me because growing up without a father, I lost my father at the age of 3 to suicide. And so growing up without a father, I like really prided myself on never, my kids never have to go through that same hurt. And then in a different form, I was taken away from them. So that was a real, real hard thing for me. And I'm still going through it a little bit. I do have a good relationship with all three children today. I do not have custody, but I'm able to see them and go watch them play baseball. And the coolest thing, my little girl, Carly, she was probably impacted the most because she was, when she last lived with me and her mother, she was probably close to 10 or 11 towards the end. But I remember like taking her to school and kindergarten and all that kind of stuff. And so she was more in the house while we were using and thought that we were maintaining and we thought that we were doing something right. She was there. And so, God only knows what she may have seen or what she may think. But I was able to go down to her job. She works at a trampoline park down in Noonan, and she had just got her learner's license, and I was there for, I think it was Father's Day. I went down to see both boys. They were at her job at this trampoline park playing, and I was just there hanging out, and I hadn't got a lot of, this was just recent, so back in, what was that? Was Father's Day, May or June, something like that. I hadn't had a lot of interactions with Carly because of her age and because of my situation. So I was able to see her at her job. I took her a birthday present because her birthday was in June. So it was shortly after her birthday. And I was able to let her go outside and drive me around the parking lot because she had just got her learners and she hadn't drove a car yet. Oh, excuse me. That's a very emotional thing. So it was so beautiful to be able to just have that interaction with her, even for a few minutes. Like, it didn't last long. It was just, I mean, she was on the clock and she had to go back inside, but just letting her drive my vehicle around the parking lot of her work and seeing her as a young adult, I like to think that I did something right along the way because of how she turned out. And then I got, you know, my two boys who are very young, who I love dearly. And, you know, I get to go down and watch them play baseball. And they're really into golf right now, and they play basketball. So I'm able to go to these sporting events. And because I grew up in sports, I'm able to be there and be a part of that and be a part of their lives, you know. And they're, you know, always so happy to see me. So even at, I think, 21 months sober, I've still got some work to do to get to where I'm trying to go. But I've came a long way from where I was at. So, yeah, that's my take.
Absolutely. Nice. Thank you, guys. And, yeah, the work never ends. And that's, I think that that's a beautiful thing, continuous growth and development. You know, this is a long-haul journey. And like you said, you know, putting down the drug, putting down the drink. I mean, I agree that was the easy part. Staying sober, looking inward, dealing with those character defects, stuff like that. That's a much, much harder path. And, you know, all those moments you guys talked about, those are beautiful gifts of recovery. You know, we get our shit back.
Yeah.
So last question is, if you could visit yourself at any age, what advice would you have for yourself?
Yeah. He said it like it was going to be an easy question. Yeah. He did. I'm going to let you go first on that one. I'm going to need to think.
Yeah. All right. Let's see how I can bullshit my answer on this. I actually did a... you're not giving me this emotional shit, are you?
Huh?
Well, I'm not getting emotional.
It's an emotional night.
Okay, there was a moment. I did this exercise, this meditation. You know, and it's where you kind of go back to a very traumatic or profoundly impactful moment in your life, and you visit your younger self.
Yeah.
And so this moment was the moment my parents told me they were going to get divorced. And so I had left the house, and at the time I was doing a lot of meth. And so I had just done this big old... gagger, I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah.
And so I'm right at the beginning of, like, spun out. And they call me, we need you to come home. And it's like, we need you to come home.
Uh-oh.
So I'm like, oh, shit, I'm coming home. And so I come home, and I sit on the dining room table. And they tell me, yeah, we're going to get divorced, and, you know, dad's going to move out. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going to go take a shower. Right, so I'm like, I need some private space here because I'm starting to get this. Anyone's done meth knows exactly the moment I'm talking about, and so,
yeah.
I go in the shower. I take the longest freaking shower I could possibly take. I come out of the shower and my dad has already left, and my mom's sitting on the couch and she's crying, and I can't console her because my heart is beating out of my fucking chest, and you know I don't want to give her another thing to worry about. And so I did this meditation where the me now went back to that 14 year old me or 15 year old me, and I put my arm around myself and I said, it's okay, we made it. Mm-hmm. We made it out, you know. And that was a profound meditation and a profound visualization, because that little motherfucker is still alive in me, you know. And when stuff don't go my way, he's pitching a fit. And so he needs to be taken care of. You know, he doesn't need to be, like, shut up and ignored. And that's what I did for many years, you know. He needed me to put my arm around him and tell him we made it out, you know. And and now I have a beautiful relationship with my mom, you know, where... she can depend on me. She hears from me often, you know. We have great conversations, you know, and so I've able to amend that relationship, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was just a deeply impactful meditation that I've done, and I think anybody who wants to do it, call me and we'll walk through. I'll walk you through the same thing, you know. It's powerful to tell yourself that, to tell that younger self that you made it out. Mm. You're not living that way no more, and it's okay. Mm.
That is incredibly powerful, and it sounds like an exercise that I did during an ART session, Advanced Resolution Therapy. Kind of go back and revisiting a traumatic memory, and you can kind of rewrite the narrative. And there was a lot of healing that came from that with me as well. So that is beautiful. That was awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, that was great. I should have went first. I can't top that. Well, and listening to you tell that beautiful story, man, that's powerful. It made me think, like where did this shift happen in my young using life, where I was really trying to play this role and thought I had to be somebody that I wasn't. And I feel like if I could go back and tell my younger self, when I was around like 11 or 12, we moved from like, kind of like a bad school district to a much better one. And I was going into eighth grade, so I guess I was like 12 or 13 probably. And if I could go back and tell myself somewhere in that summer time period in between the two schools, like, you don't have to be tough and you don't have to be anything, like, you're just a kid and it's okay. So, yeah, because I feel like something happened there at a young age where I was in this really tough school and I had to be a certain way to survive. And so I carried that with me into a much happier place, and it was not necessary. And then that negative energy and that toxic traits that I had followed me, and it continued to stay with me, you know, all the way up until I was an adult and even now. So if I could go back, I think that would be the time, if I would go back to that to that summer and say, hey man, it's all right. You don't have to be tough and you don't have to be hard and you don't have to do anything, you know, but be yourself.
Nice. That's awesome, guys.
I want Clayton to answer the question. Can you answer that question?
Yeah. Oh. I was waiting for a turnaround.
Yeah, you got it.
Whew. Let's see. Probably go back to a much younger version of myself. Elementary school, middle school, even into high school and stuff, and just tell myself that I am enough. You know, I had a number of things in my childhood that left me behind a little bit physically and mentally, and there was a lot of times that I spent having to kind of seemingly work harder than the other kids. I had a number of surgeries growing up to where I was watching other kids play sports. I was watching other kids at recess, and I was watching them from a wheelchair on the sidelines. I had a learning disability growing up to where it was okay for me just to pass classes. And, you know, I was in, you know, I had to do extra studying and stuff like that. So kind of growing up, I did have this feeling of subpar. And, so I think just going back and telling myself that I'm enough, and we made it out. Not only made it out, we didn't just survive, but we're thriving. And
Yeah. Good. That was good. That was deep.
Guys, thank you so much. That's all the questions that I had. Chad, Christian, happiest of birthdays to you. I'm so happy that I'm here to get to celebrate with you guys. So thank you, guys. Thank you to our viewers. Thank you to our studio audience. Thank you to our donors and sponsors. It wouldn't be possible without you all. So this has been another prodigious podcast of The Most High Show. Thank you and good night.
No high like Most High.